Good evening, and welcome to a special live edition of Planet Waves FM. This is a collaborative project between PlanetWaves.net and Chiron Return. Welcome, everyone who is listening. I see a few of you on. I imagine people will start to trickle in. This is planned as an open conversation. If you are interested in speaking, just press star 2 on your phone, and I will see you. Maybe a couple of minutes till I pick up, depending. Usually there's not that many people who are that eager to speak, but who knows? This was propositioned as an opportunity to speak up, so maybe that will help a little bit. So remember, star 2. Meanwhile, it has been another utterly stunning news day. I don't mean to sound like Rachel Maddow starting every show with, like, you know, holy shit, I had to rewrite the script 4 times, which I believe her when she says that. But hey, they get good at rewriting, and then eventually they figure out to not use a script at all, which they probably cannot do for the Rachel Maddow show. Anyway, what is happening today is that the extent of this policy of trying to get foreign governments to do the bidding of the Trump administration is now unraveling. So my hunch was that when we found out that that Trump had made this call to the Ukraine, I still call it the Ukraine, and basically tried to con this new president, who is, by the way, a comedian. And Anatoly, our man in the Ukraine, confirms that he is funny. So just in case you're wondering. And then they get caught. Basically, they catch themselves doing this, and they shove the call onto a more secure server. They hide the transcript, and they start dealing in things like summaries of the transcript. Meanwhile, this person in the spy shop somewhere blows the whistle over the summer on all of these activities, and it all points back to this kind of digital file cabinet in the White House where they're stashing all of these conversations with all of these records of all of this criminal activity, all of the the no collusion, no obstruction greatest hits are all on this server. And to me, this is like pointing to the mother load. This is where it's going to be interesting. And as I've mentioned a few times, I have been shying away from the natal astrology of political figures for a couple of reasons. One is I've become much more of a mundane astrologer over the years. I do natal charts. I'm good at them. But in terms of public figures, I'm much more interested in the grand scheme of things. And I want to see everyone represented in the chart, not just one person represented in the chart. And that's the problem with the natal chart, is it tends to represent one person. However, I took a look at Trump's chart today purely out of perverse curiosity to see where the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto touches his chart. And it turns out that he has Saturn and Venus right in that degree range of Cancer, exactly opposite the Saturn-Pluto conjunction of 1-12-20. And furthermore, that Eris is squaring this. So he's got his Saturn close to opposite the United States Pluto. And now Saturn and Pluto are going to be there. They're kind of there now, but they're really about to be there. And furthermore, there's a centaur called Pholus that is in that degree of Capricorn. Now, I know that I've been kind of harping on the family tree bit about Pholus, which is one of two major facets of Pholus is the goes back three generations thing. And that's an important facet of Follis. And in some ways, it's a minor element of the story. I need to go back and reread Melanie Reinhart, which is kind of like my notebook on Follis, To the Edge and Beyond by Melanie Reinhart. There's the other side of Follis, which is the runaway reaction side of Follis, the nuclear meltdown that can't be stopped side of Follis. The I just went and researched the Tosh.0 episode about Dr. Pimple Popper. Does anyone remember that episode? It's too disgusting of a metaphor to share visually, so I'll just describe it and gross you out only a little bit. But there's one, if I recall correctly, there's one scene in there where she lances an abscess, and the pus just keeps coming out and out and out and out, and you wonder, like, when is this going to end? And that's the energy of Follis. It's like letting a genie out of a bottle. It's like it's this kind of thing that just keeps going and never seems to abate in its momentum. And this is the thing in the degree of the Saturn-Pluto conjunction with this, when this thing happens in January, on January 12th, opposite his Pluto-Venus, square transiting Eris, this is going to blow sky high. I don't usually feel that confident making predictions. I can't, especially now that this has started to gain momentum. I can't see this going any other way except blowing sky high. And all during this conjunction that's happening that is affecting the entire country. So his chart links right into the United States chart, it links right into the transits that we're experiencing, and they have spent 3 years packing things into that genie bottle. You know, it's or that the abscess that needs to be lanced, or the 100 pounds of shit in a 50-pound sack, or whatever metaphor you want to use. They have been sweeping things in there. And like holding it together by some miracle, or the force and power of the presidency and this kind of institutional power of the United States government and all of these things and the momentum that has. But really, I think that the mountain has been honeycombed out by mining, and it's just I can see things collapsing now. The problem, especially the administration itself, the problem is that we live in this seriously bifurcated reality right now, where there are many people who are deeply committed to their version of reality to the exclusion of all others, and there's no fact-checking this. I was out taking a walk today, and I heard someone on this thing called the Walkway Across the Hudson, heard somebody mumbling about the Clinton emails and all this stuff, and I couldn't help myself. Usually in public, I'm more polite, but I said, "Well, this just seems like the bald abuse of power to me. It just sounds like one more example." And she said, "Well, I don't really care what it is. If he were an axe murderer, meaning the president of the United States, if he were an axe murderer, I would still not vote for the Democrat." And that stopped me, and I'm thinking, well, okay, first of all, this confirms that the energy is coming from the ground. And the one caveat I have about this slow-motion car accident, Stephen King, in one of his books about writing, says, you know, everyone wants to watch the car accident in slow motion. So he's made a good living on showing us the car accident in slow motion all of his life, is that it dwells on the figure and doesn't dwell on the ground. And this is deceiving. It's even deceiving to the point of being dangerous, because it's easy to be persuaded and to get the idea that the energy is coming from Trump or from the government or from above and somehow trickling down to the people. And I do get that there's the issue of the example that he sets for all the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts and the kids in school and all this stuff. But I think that their parents are a much more influential example, and you couldn't have something like this happening were it not supported. And I think that to think that it's supported by one political party or the other is equally deceiving and deceptive, to think that this is only about one seeming side of the issue. And probably, like most people listening, I want to believe that that one political party in the United States has a better claim on morality, and there may even be some example. But I think that what is going on now is affecting every person, and that this propensity to deception and self-deception and living in a living in isolation from other ideas is a general phenomenon, and it is one of the internet. It is one of digital reality, and we are all impacted by digital reality, including, you know, people living in wherever in the Smoky Mountains who've never seen or touched a computer or cell phone in their entire life, and you know, Aborigines living in the Australian bush, and people who have just not. The whole world is affected by the literacy of that era, of that time. Every person is affected by that form of literacy, and I'm cautioning myself and want to caution my listeners to be mindful of the extent to which we are going to be distracted by this horror show on the screen, this slow motion car accident, the extent of the hideous behavior of this administration cannot be overstated. So I'm not suggesting that they've like done anything right, or that they're good people, or that they're not complete hellacious fuck-ups. To the point where it's going to be utterly insane to see what happens. There's no escaping a major Saturn-Pluto event like this without something happening. I mean, the last one was 9/11, and people were pretty well blindsided by that. There were a couple of predictions of terrorism, but there was no one, including one in some minor astrological day calendar, but there was no one. Oh, and Rob Hand predicted war with Afghanistan and a few others, but there was no suggestion from anywhere in the astrology community that I'm aware of that we were at a before and after moment, and that the world was going to change irrevocably as a result of this event. And it did. And now we're, you know, at another major turning point of this same cycle, where the last major turning point was 9/11. And the thing about 9/11 is that I'm of the persuasion, after looking at it for many, many years from every possible angle, that there is nothing resembling the official story that actually holds up. This is not conspiracy theorizing. This is I'm not speculating. No matter where I stick a fork into 9/11, I wind up with a gingerbread house and not an actual building. And so now we're back at the next major station stop on this cycle. And the critical turning point we are at is that this kind of privatized reality and this disdain for the commons, which is a big problem, have reached their apotheosis. And now we see a completely privatized White House that's run like a private institution. And the pitfall of running the White House like a private institution is it's illegal. And so we're going to see all of this coming out. I mean, The Ukrainian president said that he stayed at the Trump Hotel to butter up Trump. I mean, he comes right out and says it in the conversation. And we know this is going on. We know there are countless emoluments going on. And this is just reflective of the way that we have basically elected to live as a society. One of the early warning signs that I saw was when Chiron was in Capricorn. Right after 9/11, in November of 2001, Chiron entered Capricorn. Saturn was in Gemini, Pluto was in Sagittarius, and then Chiron is a kind of a forerunner going into Capricorn a bit ahead of Pluto. In fact, six or so years ahead of Pluto. And my intuition at the time, and maybe somebody can find where I wrote this, because I'm pretty sure that I wrote this down somewhere, was that we were going to see every problem that would come up under Pluto and Capricorn if we didn't fix it when Chiron was in Capricorn. And so two huge things occurred, one of which was 9/11 and then the two fraudulent wars that were started as a result of it. I mean, and by the way, for 9/11, you do not need to look further than the fact that something like 18 of the hijackers, all but two who were Emiratis, all but two of the hijackers were Saudis. Saudis are our friends. The entire leadership and hijacking team was Saudi. And then we bomb Afghanistan and Iraq, and there's no repercussions for Saudi Arabia. Like, how did anyone even miss that? And so the way you miss that is by being in a reality bubble and not like checking, not caring, even worse. The second thing that happened was Enron. And Enron was a fictitious economy, and the collaboration with the government of this astonishing financial fraud, the rolling blackouts in California. Does anyone remember the rolling blackouts in California in the late 1990s, where they were turning off entire cities and regions of the state of California with this, you know, I won't say perfect infrastructure, but really plenty of infrastructure, as if it was, you know, war-torn Iraq. This was Enron doing this. And I'm thinking, you know, if they don't fix this, the entire economy is going to become an Enron economy. This fraudulent form of accounting called mark-to-market accounting. And to give you an example of mark-to-market accounting is, let's imagine that I invent the new, like, extra gold subscription and make a product code and put it on the market for $2,000. And then I say, well, and we're going to have 1,000 sales of this a year. And then we're going to have 1,000 sales a year for 20 years. And I add it all up and I say, that's how much money I've got. That was what Enron did. And what ends up happening is, over those next few years, is all of these mortgage-based securities not only are invented, created, and sold based on fraudulent mortgages, but major United States and international corporations base their portfolios on those, some with half or more of their portfolios, and it was all fiction. So here we are now at the peak of, I'm thinking this is really like the second and possibly biggest peak of the Pluto and Capricorn era. And once again, we're seeing the 9/11 style of running a government in full bloom, a complete, utter criminal enterprise to make Reagan envious. Really, I mean, this makes Reagan and Bush look like good guys. They were just, you know, ordinary scammers and hucksters, and who I think may have had a shred of non-cynical patriotism left. And here we are with basically this false privatized government about to be revealed. And my concern is we're going to think it's about them and not about us. And it is a serious concern. It's a very big distraction. And I think we've got to keep the therapy mirror on, however you want to think of that. So that's a bit of my ramble. Wow, I've gone on for 20 minutes. That's easy. We've got a few people on the call. I would love to hear some of your thoughts on this. Don't worry if you don't think that what you have to say is particularly profound. You can scream and yell. You can do primal therapy. You can lay down on the floor and pound on the floor. You can tell us hello. You can say whatever you want. So that's *2 to take part. And please, it would make it easy for me because I'm going to keep talking until someone says something. We can't just sit around and we're not in Vipassana. We can't sit around in silence for 10 days. So one other thing, *2, that'll be you. One other thing I noticed in Trump's chart is, since I always check the progress chart, is that he is in the midst of his progressed new moon. In other words, his progressed sun in Virgo has just taken a conjunction from his progressed moon in Virgo just in the past 2 weeks. The progressed moon moves 1 degree per month, 1 degree per month, and he is right in the middle of that right now. And so this whole thing surfaced about 2 weeks ago, and it surfaced as part of his progressed new moon. This is the definition of his lunar cycle. This is now what his life is going to be about, and he's not a spring chicken. He's in his 70s, and what we're seeing now, I think, is going to define the rest of his life. The problem from the standpoint of those of us in the citizenry is, are we willing to stand up to this and to make real decisions and take real action, or are most people going to take the escape from freedom route, eloquently described by Eric Fromm in his book by the same title, where freedom, meaning a society where we make the choices, where we run society, where we live our lives based on our decisions, is too scary and too much responsibility, and simply where tyranny is easier. And one of my first thoughts after the lady who said I would take an axe murderer in the form of President Trump over any Democrat is, this person is afraid to be alive. Okay, let's talk to Joshua in Tacoma, Washington. Good evening, Joshua.
Hey, Eric, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for pointing out the position of Pholus. I was so busy, I was so hypnotized by Saturn, as usual, that I didn't look at the rest of the chart. So good one. All right, so welcome. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Well, it was interesting. I pulled up Ivana Trump's chart, his ex-wife, and I noticed that Jupiter is at 22 pretty much degrees of Capricorn, mm-hmm. and Pholus is at 28. So it was just kind of a side comment that I thought that was interesting.
And you have a birth time on her? Rodden, is that an AstroDataBank or something?
It was, I have it from IOSprite, so it was in the famous families, but it's February 20th, 1949.
So she's a very early degree Pi. Oh, Ivanka, his wife, not, wait. Melania is the current wife.
This is his ex-wife, Ivana.
I see. Right. Okay, yeah. So she's in the mix, and so she, you're saying she has a Jupiter opposition to his Saturn-Venus.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
And Pholus is really close as well.
Right. Well, we haven't heard from her much, have we? She's the mom of the...
I don't think so.
...of the kids the Onions keep parodying, Eric and whatever the other guy is, the ones who chop the heads off of things that...
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think that the Sibley chart is the chart to track here. You know, particularly given how accurate that was with 9/11, that Saturn-Pluto opposition went right across the Sibley chart, you know, within a degree or so, and now we're on the Pluto of the Sibley chart. So big times. And Trump is really talking about civil war? He's like really actually saying this from the podium? He's really talking about civil war? Like what? And having a Schiff? Okay, Schiff, he's in with the pharmaceutical companies. Tried for treason? And he wants the whistleblower delivered to him? And all the people who talk to him? Like, bring me the whistleblower. Off with his head. Do we care enough?
Yeah, I've not followed it as much as
do we care enough? Like that's what I'm wondering. Let's let that be the question of the night. Do we care enough to do anything about this? To have our opinions matter? So any other thoughts here? So she's in the karma. I mean, obviously, but I mean, fortunately for her, she got out more or less.
Yeah.
We'll just get to visit her sons in Dannemora, maybe. So, any other thoughts?
I think that's it for now. I haven't really had much time to look at it. I've got to run, but I'm going to hop back on a little bit later in the call.
Okay, so you can hang up or I'll pause you. You're on your cell phone probably. So we'll catch you when you get back from your meeting.
Yeah.
And thanks for opening up the conversation.
Right. Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Mika from San Jose. Can you hear me? Hello. Mika from San Jose. You are on the air. Well, okay. I'll leave your line open. Victoria from New York City. Good evening.
Hey, good evening. I just have to jump on quickly to say that this thing broke exactly when Saturn was squaring Trump's Chiron, anal Chiron.
Ah.
And I also wanted to, his Chiron is 14 Libra. Point out that Solus is what? It's like 29 Sag now.
Yes.
And so that's exactly trine the great American apocalypse.
Yep.
You know, so that's also an interesting thing, which hits his ascendant exactly.
Right.
You know, the eclipse.
Yeah, I mean, that was the that was the kind of starting bell of all this.
That was it.
That was big times ahead, this thing that, you know, had never happened before.
Yeah, took long enough, but, it's still taking long enough. And one other thing that I just saw, which is pretty wild, this is from like the Daily Cause that I get, an email letter from, you know, like a newsletter. Chris Wallace on Fox News apparently yesterday said that two of Fox's own frequent guests and Trump supporters may have been like enmeshed in this thing. Two lawyers, I've seen their names before, Joe DeGenova and Victoria Tomsing, have been working with Giuliani gathering research up for that note on Biden.
Right.
That and they're like Fox commentators.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody has known about it except for Trump. And so, like, Chris Wallace added them on Fox News yesterday morning.
Right.
So it's all happening.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of people who kind of are involved. And, you know, Barr, I think, is the big fish here.
Barr, what the what?
Well, he basically said, look, I mean, basically he said, look, I've got the experience. Let me join the mafia, basically, is what he said. Right? I mean, this would be like me. This would be like me going to my uncle down in the city and saying, all right, I'm ready for a job.
It nullifies any sense of feeling obligated to participate in in, you know, anything legal whatsoever. When the Attorney General, who is named in this thing, like, doesn't recuse himself, he's just kind of like, hey, I got this.
Well, how about this? It's, front page Washington Post right now. Barr is said to have urged foreign governments to aid investigation of CIA and FBI activities related to the 2016 election. He went to...
No, I know that they're really trying to go there. Right. So, I mean, the issue is denial on every front, because even those of us who see and register what's happening, to really grasp it, I'm not really grasping it. I see it. I recognize it. It is surreal.
Yeah.
How do you grasp what's really surreal?
Well,
and
when you think it's bigger than them, this is the thing.
Oh, yeah.
It is. I mean, I have to remind myself every time I start thinking, which is pretty often, to turn around, and I hear the voice of Eric McLuhan in my ear saying, the interesting thing is the ground, not the figure. Don't be distracted by the figure. Keep looking at, feel the ground. The energy, the action is coming from the ground. So I keep having to turn myself around and reorient on the ground. And I hate to sound annoying, but I have to keep, with my overactive mind, keep reminding myself to do this, because all of these assholes are a distraction.
Sure. No, for sure. But so, I think the ground, personally, the internet is a symptom of the ground. The internet is a co-creator of the ground. The internet is not the primal cause of the ground.
Whose theory are you using? What are you grounding
Toltec
that idea
in? Cosmology.
Oh.
I'm looking in terms of time scales.
I guess.
I don't want to utilize too much time here, speaking of time, but I'll just offer this one thought. In terms of the 2012 and 2020.
Yeah.
Right. So according to the most well-preserved version of ancient Mesoamerican cosmological prediction, you know, or time scale, calendrical system, the shift, 2012 marked a midpoint between the shifting of the fifth to the sixth sun.
Right.
The beginning was, I believe, 1992, and the conclusion is 2021. Then they begin and end with eclipses, total solar eclipses, which constitute in that system, it's like a lucid dream when you can, like, shift realities.
Right.
And the cycle that we're entering into is one in which reality, you know, do you remember in Castaneda the reference to the tonal and the nahual? One is consensus reality, the tonal, and like where reality exists outside. And everything like religion, war, doctors, is fundamental to the Tanal.
Yeah.
Even a concept of God is part of the Tanal. And the Nahual is akin to a dreamtime reality, where the internal world that exists beyond time and space connects to one's eternal entity, as opposed to one's discrete personality, ego identity, which is a tonal thing. And so we're shifting into a major cycle in which the ground of reality itself is less physical, less determined by time and space parameters. And so that is why I perceive the internet as being a participant, an aspect, rather than a primal cause, because it just fits so perfectly with that system, which is, you know, tens of thousands of years old, that particular way of marking the calendar.
Right.
Some 2021 eclipse, solar eclipse. Anyway.
Yeah, okay, so I'm with you in principle on that. That there could be something much wider. Obviously, the Earth is not the center of the universe, and there's very, very large forces at work. And, you know, I spent a fair amount of time thinking about Leni Achaea and the way that our galaxy is tucked way out on the end of that and all this blah, blah, blah. So my only issue with considering this, considering the internet or the medium environment that we live in, whatever it is at the time, as secondary, is that it's not really possible to study this Tonal Nagual type reality and the calendars and all that objectively, and requires a leap of religious faith. Whereas there are so many documented examples of the way in which these transitions of media environments, whether it's the introduction of print, and then that was probably the biggest one of all prior to digital, was a movable type.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And so that is at least studyable, and you can make up cohesive theories, and you can describe the way in which, you know, the telephone had its impact, and the typewriter had its impact, and the radio had its impact. And
so here's a question in terms of how that ground affects consciousness, you know, or how one's relationship to society. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen examples of this also, we probably all have, the woman that you overheard,
mm-hmm.
who said he could be an axe murderer.
Yeah, I interrupted her. I entered her, I popped in. Eric Francis popped in on her.
I'm good
reality.
For you. I'm a constant popper inner myself.
And I visited her.
I can't help it.
In her little axe murder universe. By the way, so I wanted to say something about her. She has probably never been to the scene of an axe murder. She's probably never even read about the scene of an axe murder.
Chances are.
Just saying. I mean, I don't know this for sure. I didn't take her number. I didn't want to wind up in the Poughkeepsie Journal. But axe murders are bad.
Why are people so utterly? It's in going back to the Toltec cosmology, which, you know, the prediction that all kinds of hell was going to break loose in 2012 was obviously not true, but it was an intimation of part of the tradition that preceded the Mayans. That is what the shadow material held in the Nahual, like shit we haven't dealt with that we didn't even know about.
In the consensus reality, in the consensus reality, you mean? Nahual being consensus. No, Tonal is consensus reality.
No. Right. No, it's like all the shit in our unconscious is coming out into the world because that is the realm that's taking over. That's the only, like, ultimate reason I can parse events within, in terms of why rage is the currency, and any sort, because it's the ultimate projection. It's madness. It's collective madness. Yeah. And, like, everyone's having kind of a shared breakdown, or enough of them. Mm-hmm. But I've seen this also, just a complete, psychic breakdown, where there's no There's no there there. And many of them invoke Jesus along with their hatred.
Well, we cannot underestimate the power of the Dominionists and their commitment to the end of the world as a stand-in for their utter terror of death and their complete suppression of orgasm. This packs a lot of shit into the unconscious. I mean, people think, oh, suppress an orgasm? Oh, who cares? I don't need that. It's porno, whatever. But, you know, we all agree we need to shit. So I don't want to compare orgasm too much to shit, but it has a similarity.
No. I mean,
someone wrote, I'm sorry you're going to remember this for the rest of your life. There's nothing so overrated as lovemaking and nothing so underrated as a good bowel movement. Think about it long enough. We have a society that is not having bowel movements on the psychic level. There's very little cathartic activity for us.
No, absolutely. That's the deal. That is 100% the deal. We drug them, and there is a huge portion of the economy depends on people not being in their right mind.
Yeah. I want to keep the discussion going though of you're saying that the media environment is not the cause. I'm not. I wish Marshall were here to talk to you about this, and I never brought this
up. I'm talking about like an ultimate.
I get it.
You know, in terms like a prime.
No,
thing.
No, I get it.
It's certainly.
I get.
Yeah,
it. But they dealt
guess
with cause.
That it is the.
Go ahead.
I mean, I understand the concept of. A very profound influence on the way one conceives, on group conceptualization, and an approach to any kind of interaction, an approach to everything related to self and non-self. But to call any kind of man-made medium a cause for what really does seem to be such an unprecedented, I'm calling it an epochal shift because that's what I think it is.
And these do happen.
It seems to me like a little cart before the horse. What?
Right. Well, okay, so the whole concept of cause and effect, I think, needs to be reconsidered. I mean,
yeah,
Marshall once
true.
Said in a letter that the telephone caused the invention of the telegraph. And what he was talking about was formal cause. So there's a number of different kinds of cause. It's not all simple like dominoes falling down. And I don't think that that's what they meant when in any of their analyses. But I had to run this past them to understand what Marshall meant when he said that the telephone caused. Telephone is from like late 19th century or something. Later than the telegraph.
Right.
Invention of the telegraph.
Right.
Okay. How did that? Mean? What does he mean by that, though?
I get that. In that, this is the direction that evolution was moving in, and so the phenomena of the telephone existed, and one had to build the infrastructure to get there. I get that. I have no problem.
So it was steps along the way to that. Steps
a
along
non,
the way to
non-linear
that.
Time.
But imagine, well, it is linear, but it's just not in the normal order. So,
well, it's not going in one direction, right?
Yes. And so things are influencing each other from different directions of time. Now,
yeah.
Now
that's
I don't,
physics.
And it doesn't really matter whether... whether the internet is causing
things,
what is happening is our, method of relating to the environment is what our consciousness is about. Now, you may be saying that there's... Yeah. Okay, so for example, there's... one of my 2012 jokes is that, you know, people like Wilcock and others are like, oh, we're going to ascend. We're going to have an ascension. We're going to have an ascension. We're going to have an ascension. Right? I got to hang out with Wilcock before he was Wilcock. And in a cave in Warsendale drumming and going to astrology conferences. And there was always going to be an ascension, 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 ascension. Everyone talking about ascension, ascension, ascension. Okay, what did we get? The iPhone. So we did have an ascension. We ascended to the 3G and 4G networks. We had an ascension. We ascended to the synthetic astral plane. So what if there was another way of doing that ascension? What if there was a, you know, we kind of didn't quite make it to whatever
5D is. Well, just because David Wilcock said it does not mean that that was a legitimate interpretation of much of anything.
Well, he, among others, were talking about ascension, right? We're ascending. Yeah, we're going to go to 5D.
How many degrees separation from their source were they?
I know, but this is a New Age meme. I'm not saying that he's responsible for this idea. It's a New Age meme. You can find it pretty much in any...
Memes are memes.
I mean meme by, like, Blavatsky or Alice A. Bailey or Edgar Casey or... a concept introduced to the culture, right? A concept that emerges from
We're talking about a specific thing from a specific culture, and that, you know, so that does matter, to take something and spin it in some way that is kind of comfortable for, you know, late 20th century United States is a whole other deal. But anyway, there's absolutely much power in using the idea that internet is fundamental in terms of generating or spawning the type of, I really don't even know what to call
electricity.
It. That's
okay, so
exemplified in that woman.
Yeah.
Disconnected. Yeah.
Disconnected from any.
Well, that's one word for it. Yeah.
And violent. I mean, and violent, right?
It's just enraged, hateful.
Yes.
Hateful. And I can feel that also. I'm aware of, you know, a tremendous, like, collective legacy of. You know, despair and fear and anger. Mm-hmm. You can feel it welling up from the ground.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Got ground on the mind. So, but, I mean, it's not just her. It's there. It's in the air.
Right. So, remembering that the I'm not blaming the internet for anything, by the way. I'm saying that it's the dominant environment up till about yesterday. And that we're currently moving into a completely discarnated virtual and augmented reality environment. And so what we're getting is a synthetic version of a spiritual ascension. We're getting a technological metaphor for what could be happening
really,
in a much more organic,
really, that's
natural
a real drag.
Way. It's a real drag. And that electricity, electricity and electrical communication are... as impactful as anything that, look, all of what we're doing right now
no,
is a form
for sure.
of telegraph. It's all a form of telegraph. It's leaping out of the body and moving at the speed of light. My voice is not supposed to be moving from here to Manhattan at the speed of fucking light. It's not. It's supposed to move at the speed of sound. So think of the power of accelerating my
voice.
Well, it's
voice. At the speed of light, but yeah, anyway. Yeah,
very close to it. Electrical circuitry moves close to the speed of light. It's slowed down by all these capacitors and resistance points.
Well,
but pure electricity moves very fast and certainly much faster than the speed of sound. Just slow.
Well, so the question then would be, what is the what needs are unmet and how to meet them, and what needs are met by the purging, albeit unconsciously and destructively, of the wealth of repressed pain that we are witnessing. So what is the need that is unmet, and what would need it? Seems a logical question raised by all of this.
Well, you know, you have to get to like the third paragraph of A Course in Miracles to get some information about that. And, you know, and we're encountering questions that only have spiritual answers.
Of course.
Right. So that's worth bearing in mind. Let's bring Amanda onto the call from Washington, D.C.
Hey, Amanda. Okay. Ciao.
Yeah, we are still on. Amanda,
thank
can you hear me? Amanda from Washington, D.C. Okay. Mika from San Jose.
I have to sign off.
Okay,
I'm
good.
Signing off.
All right, bye for now.
Okay.
Okay, this is bizarre. I can't figure out why you can't hear me.
Oh, is this who is speaking?
This is Amanda.
Hi, Amanda. Now I can hear you.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. Welcome.
Thank you. I get a lot of comfort from your writings, and it's what I really seek right now, and it's why I'm in on this call, because I like hearing what you have to say, and I'm finding that in my own life, and probably in other people's lives, I'm not really sure, time just seems to be speeding up to a point where I can't get things done. I don't have enough time to concentrate. I'm not addicted to my computer or my television or anything like that, but I seem to be pounded with things that need to be done yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I find that I don't have the time to do what I need to do, which is to try and work through all the things that have been discussed over the past hour. and for me, I'm seeking comfort from you. Do you have any insights, thoughts, advice on how to manage this feeling of just being overwhelmed for no real reason? It's just time. Time is different now for me.
Well, it is, and we're getting older, time is now measured in nanoseconds. I mean, I sometimes wonder what it was like when there were little like fountains measuring time, and sundials and hourglasses measuring time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was the change in consciousness? Of making a calendar and then suddenly setting standard time, right? I mean, from what I understand historically, if you said we're meeting at 1, that meant during the 1 o'clock hour. And now 1 means like between 1 and 1:02 and a half, basically. That's different, right? And then they make standard time, and then now there's network time, which is set to an atomic clock, and we live in this temporal medium. And I definitely know the feeling. Like, I just barely get it done, and people wonder how I get it done. I mean, it's because somebody named Courtney comes over and boils chicken for my dogs and freezes it for me and things like that, right? So, I personally, you know, give up on many of the things that people normally do. So I kind of I'm okay rolling out of bed and answering emails at 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you know, I certainly feel it at the end of the day. I'm like, oh, I wish I had like 2 hours a day to immerse myself in music. So I have my kind of extreme ways of doing it, and try to live for one purpose. So I don't know, you know, inside of your I'm not inside of your world and, you know, your responsibilities and the commitments that you have and the people that you're responsible for. But when I look at my life, I know that I'm pretty beholden to quite a few people. Like, I really got to take care of a lot of people. So I don't have children or a spouse or things like that. But I do things like I avoid driving. And because I avoid driving, I end up having a 2-block range for the most days. I don't leave North Front Street or Wall Street. If you're looking for me, anyone out there, just wander around on North Front Street or Wall Street in Kingston. You'll within an hour, you'll find me. So it is. I get the feeling. I mean, we're in a maelstrom. I mean, we're in this massive swirling storm of overload. I mean,
and it seems that there isn't enough time to react before another avalanche comes rolling down. And I have a really serious concern about that because I'm aware of the astrology and I understand that something big is coming and I want to do something, but I've got the on the one hand, like I said, time is speeding up I don't have a spouse or kids either. And it's just with business and all this shit coming down, you know, and the news media, it's relentless. And there isn't enough time to catch up. And I work so hard and I find myself working even harder and then all of a sudden the day is gone. So for me, I'm trying to manage my life within that and trying to be as proactive as I can in a positive way. But yet I'm also trying to be safe. And you know, I'm aware that there's surveillance everywhere. I mean, there are cameras pointing at us all the time. And there's this sense of, I don't want to say existential doom, because I don't feel like we're doomed necessarily. I think that we have an out. But I'm having a hard time jumping on that train because it's going 700 miles an hour now instead of 150 like it used to. So I guess maybe this probably sounds really convoluted, but I don't know what to do. And when I finally get to a point where I think, okay, I know how to take that next step, that option is gone because something new has come out of Washington and whatever. So you're handling it by pulling back from certain things.
Well, I try to make as much time as I can. I look for where I can avoid things that are not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I prioritize.
Okay. So maybe that's the answer.
I certainly watch a lot of episodes of South Park every day. So it's not like I'm not like the guy that I read about on some website today. Like when he stopped working out every day, he realized he was watching Netflix at night. I'm like, well. Okay, let's have a long talk about that. It's not, I personally choose to not be productive all the time. Like, I choose to not be productive because I figure my mind is a kind of a muscle. I've got to give myself some rest. So one of my strategies is to slow the fuck down and, like, you know, one of my career goals is to smoke more pot. Have I ever mentioned that? And so it's like, wow, that sounds like a good career goal. Well, it doesn't really fit with, you know, publishing books. But it's just like stop myself when I can and just stop. And lock myself in a room and stop. And feel what it used to feel like when there was more room. Yeah, to create space.
Like, wow, you know what? That's a big deal. What you just said, I hope other people are getting something out of this, not just me.
No, we're good. Well, this is good. This is a good, this is the right conversation.
This is good. Stop it. I don't allow myself to stop. I don't know how to stop. I've gone full tilt for decades. And you give yourself the permission to stop and watch South Park and smoke some pot. It's like, that's an important thing to do, and I don't allow myself. And perhaps I need to just knock it the heck off and just sit back and do nothing for a day.
Yeah.
And not apologize for it.
Yeah.
That's very helpful. I haven't stopped in a really long time.
Well, so there's
so here's thank
the thing.
You for that.
The power of ideas is I believe in the power of ideas, and I figure I'm more likely to have a good idea or to notice when I'm having one when I stop. So I figure this could be really a bonus. Like, I could, like, take a day out and save myself 10 years. Because I had the idea that got me to the next level. So it's not merely luxuriating.
Ooh, thanks. Somehow you just... It's not your job to give me permission to stop for a day or two, but thank you, because you just did.
I mean, kind of. I mean, you know, that's... I hold myself
really,
out.
You're
as...
right.
Somebody with an idea. So, yeah, I mean, and, you know, and it, you have to, I think, like, I love to go to Manhattan. One of my favorite things to do is, if I can get somebody to, you know, watch my dogs, keep them company, go to Manhattan, lock myself in a hotel room with an electric guitar and amp and pot edibles, and just seal myself in and, like, remember. Think, feel, be.
Yeah.
So I displace myself from my reality, but it doesn't. You can still do it in your own reality as long as you get the devices out of the way, and you know,
right.
People aren't coming, you know, barging into your home. Let's lock the door and you know, put on pajamas and just like pretend nothing matters for a day or so. That's a lot of time these days.
Thank you so much.
That's a lot of time these days.
Yeah.
Right? You're in our dog year.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, anytime. Well, thanks for being around, and that was a little revelation we had there.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Good. So let's see. This person, Mika, is not opened up her line. Mika, can you hear me? I don't know. There's mute Mika in San Jose. So I'm going to mute Mika back, and feel free to chime in again. And what time is it? 8:02. We've been on for an hour. Okay, Amanda, thank you. You know where to find me.
Thanks.
Yep. Anytime. All right. Moving right along here. Got a few people on this call. I know that was on somewhat short notice. Anybody who wants to chime in, I see I'm going to be like the lady on Romper Room. I see Max, and there's somebody in Davenport, Iowa, who likes to count porch lights. Maybe she'll chime in. But I have all kinds of correspondence out there. Like, I have someone who loves me, who's in France, who's constantly sending me all of the perverse articles on gender. How bizarre that's become, this whole gender anarchy that we're going through, and various people. And one of my correspondents is someone who counts porch lights in her neighborhood. So anybody who wants to chime in, please do so. Otherwise, I kind of feel like I've said everything that I need to say. It is Max, and Max is in... Max, it's loud where you are.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, that's I'm right. In a public space. I can move somewhere else.
Yeah, it's fine. That's good.
That
well, it's not that bad, as long as we can hear you.
Okay, great. I have two questions.
Yeah.
First one is, I was watching a YouTube video with Christopher Hitchens, who was a public intellectual, and he wrote some books. So you know Christopher Hitchens.
He's a minister, and is that right?
No, Christopher Hitchens. He's from... Yeah, he's he was a political commentator. He passed away in the late 2000s.
So what is his approach?
He is. He wrote a book called "God Is Not Great," and he basically took a lot of the sort of the typical stories of the Bible, the things that Christians hold very sacred, and demythed them, or I don't know if it's the right word, but basically. Tried to prove how it was false. And when he published this book, he went around the American South deliberately to states in the U.S. where they had a strong Christian background, and he went in with these debates to debate these people as a way to promote his book. Anyway,
like from a theological standpoint, like to really debate them on their own terms.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. So how did that work out?
Well, where I'm going with this is, how did it work out? I think, he always had the same message that he would tell people. Like, whenever they would which is basically that God doesn't exist, essentially. I mean, I'm trying to think of specific examples, but it's kind of tough. I'm kind of distracted by the noise. But people, they would come at him with these stories and these kind of, mythical stories from the Bible, and they would make these statements that were somehow, they tried to mix science and religion, and they would make these statements about reality and how everything is merged together. And he would say, "Okay, well, what's the source of the information? What's the where's the evidence?" And he said, "Okay, well, if there's no evidence, then how can it be real, et cetera, et cetera." He said something interesting. This is what I wanted to get to. He doesn't, I don't think he had a very, I don't think he believed in astrology, or he saw it as a valid practice of some sort. But he said he's always wondered how, because he has the same birthday as Thomas Jefferson, I believe. But he said that actually he doesn't, because Thomas Jefferson was born under the old calendar, I think he said. I think he was somewhere like 10 days apart from him. So my question to you, Eric, finally, is he said that there was a cap, that he mentioned a calendar change.
Mm-hmm.
And when did the calendar change take place? And with the softwares that you use, the fMRI, they have this change already built into the software to accommodate the
right
the
okay so this is the old style versus new style. And the let's see if I can. All right, I grapple with this a lot also. Let's just go. I'm going to mute you while I'm talking. Is that all right?
That's fine.
All right. So therefore, all right, good. So I grapple with this quite a bit, and let's see. The change actually occurs in 1582. So that's a long time ago. And when you're dealing with dates from the late 1500s into the early 1600s or so, you need to be conscious of old style and new style. Now, let's see. So I'll read a couple of details here out of Wikipedia, remembering that it is Wikipedia, and anyone can edit. Beginning in 1582, the Gregorian calendar replaced the Julian in Roman Catholic countries. This change was implemented subsequently in Protestant and Orthodox countries, usually at much later dates. Much later dates. In England and Wales and Ireland, in the British colonies, the change to the start of the year and the changeover to the Julian calendar occurred in 1752. Can you believe it took that long? For fuck's sake. Under the calendar, the New Style Calendar Act, the Calendar Act of 1750. In Scotland, the legal start of the year had already moved to 1 January in 1600, but Scotland otherwise continued to use the Julian calendar until 1752. I didn't realize it was that late. Okay, so So England, Wales, Ireland, and the colonies are changing over in the mid-18th century, which means that Jefferson who I don't know his year of birth, certainly will have been born under it. So you just have to watch. You know, you just have to watch. There's no definitive answer, and I think that responsible authors, when they're using an old style date, will have in parentheses OS. You don't need to put in NS, but usually when somebody who's a grounded writer, factually grounded writer, they'll tell you that it's an old style date. Your friend is whoever. Probably not your friend, is missing the power of symbols, which don't always have direct, let's say, validity in science. And so that he had Jefferson's birth date, Jefferson certainly used that birth date as his birth date and thought of himself that way for a long time. And that counts for something. I mean, remembering that we're swimming in Maya here, you know, we're not in a reality that has specific, particularly hard edges. And anytime you board an airplane and fly across the country slightly below the speed of sound, you are having a relativity effect and you are warping space-time just a little. The initial experiment was done not with an airplane, but with a moving train. When Einstein was proving that time was not a constant. So the nature of time is something we need to consider. Now we've got two calls in a row about the nature of time, and it's not exactly what we think, and symbols aren't exactly what we think. And yes, the new style, old style thing does make me nervous. And when I'm nervous and wanting to make sure I've got the right chart, I just double back and check. We do so much doubling back and checking at Planet Waves that when you're fully involved, you'll realize it's all you're doing all day long is doubling back and checking. So there you go. I'm going to open up your microphone again so you can, okay. Can let in all those. What country are you in? Germany, Portugal? What country are you
in? No, I'm in Boston.
You're in Boston. All right.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, so second question before it gets too loud. I've been reading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, and at the risk of spoiling, I want to bring up, an idea discussed in the book. I think I'm around page 115 or something like that. Robert, the author, he's talking about Phaedrus, the ghost who's pursuing the nature of logic itself, and he made a statement that paraphrasing here, the further we try to go into science, the nature of science itself cannot bring us to the essence of rational knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I could say that better. Like,
Can I help you a little bit?
Sure. You know what I'm trying to say?
One of my favorite rants in Phaedrus's in the book is, he says, science can account, I'm going to mute you for a second. Science can account for everything except the hypothesis. Science begins with a completely irrational thing. Some person and their brain have an idea. Well, where did that come from? Right?
Right.
So science can't really treat the nature of consciousness itself. It's always looking. It's always looking into its own fiction.
Yeah. You can hear me still?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, there's some happy people in the background, but we can still hear you.
So that's it, the hypothesis. He said that if you have, you could just keep adding more and more hypotheses, you know, to the scientific method. And, of course, there's an infinite number of hypotheses, and therefore it's like impossible to test all of those hypotheses. So therefore, you know, like, therefore, it's even more, there's even more of a, like, I don't know what the right word is, but you could, it's like, basically, inconclusive. Science is always inconclusive.
Yeah.
By default. So, when you have, to make a connection, when you have, like, somebody makes a really great invention or something that saves the whole planet or saves the environment and doesn't get funded because of big corporations, because the evidence of the science is inconclusive. I mean, so it's almost like, I don't know if I'm going out on a limb here, but it's almost like science works against our favor because of just the way it's set up in the first place.
Well, how politicized and stitched into the economy it is, and basically how it's been abused in terms of religion. Let me mute you here. Two thoughts. One is that I had this. Hold it. Okay. Sorry, everyone. The great good fortune of coming to astrology from a previous career as an investigative reporter, deconstructing scientific fraud. So, you know, science, at its best, when it's honest, has issues. But as long as you know what you're using your tool for, you're fine. As long as you're not using science to think you have ultimate reality or to believe, like many people do, that it's going to lead you there, that you can prove enough things, you know everything, right? Obviously, as Phaedra said, like, well, there's always a new idea to test and prove. There are these huge paradigm shifts in science, for example, from Newtonian to Einstein to quantum, right? These are practically contradictory realities that we somehow need to all hold together. But you don't need to take quantum effects into consideration when you're just, you know, weighing potatoes, right? you might, but, you know, you're just going to weigh the potatoes and pay for them. So I saw the abuse of science and the way that that the scientific method would be structurally abused to create the opposite result. There's an article that I'll stick up right on the front page off the call called Dioxin Critic Sued, about someone who wrote an article proving that a dioxin study was fraudulent, and the person was sued, and all of the fraudulent methods came out of proving that dioxin was not a carcinogen. And these studies are supposed to be peer-reviewed, and they have still not been denied by the American Journal of the American Medical Association and the other places that publish them. They're still considered valid scientific findings, even though they are proven to be manipulated studies. Another example is the industrial biotest lab scandal in the 1970s and early 1980s, when a guy named Peter von Stackelberg, who happens to be a friend of mine, I met him many years later, established that all of these products that are on the market, the active ingredient and all the ingredients, and things like deodorant and Lysol and PCBs and pesticides, especially pesticides and herbicides, that the testing was all fraudulent, all fraudulent. I'll mail you, or I can stick it up on planetwaves.net, the root page, now that I have got that back to play with. And the entire regulatory system collapses around 1982. The entire thing by which we think that pickle we're biting into is safe, the whole, or that deodorant you're putting under your arm is safe, the whole thing collapsed, particularly pesticides, things, poisons sprayed on your food and squirted in the cracks of your basement to keep the cockroaches out. And nothing happened. Okay, a couple of guys went to jail, token prison sentences, but all the products are on the market. All of them are on the market. No product registrations were pulled as a result of a complete breakdown of the regulatory process. And in one Senate hearing called by Ted Kennedy, one of the senators said, "Who is affected by this?" And the witness answered, anyone who washes. This is one reason why I just use Dr. Bronner's soap. That's pretty much my product, is Dr. Bronner's soap. I do not buy any of these corporate products and put them onto my body, because I know that the whole system failed. So what happened is science becomes this method that can be used or abused. And it's easy to abuse it by just screwing around with your cohort. You just take a bunch of part-time people who are exposed for 3 hours a day and lump them in with the full-time people who are exposed 10 or 12 hours a day, and suddenly your cancer rate goes down. Just because of one little thing, you slide them in. You dig me? So science has its limits. If and when you read the book The Moment of Astrology, there's a chapter on the New York suicide study. Someone attempted – there's been a couple of heroic attempts to use astrology to prove science. The whole point of the book The Moment of Astrology is to get astrologers off the concept that somehow astrology is scientifically valid, because it is a complete misunderstanding of the use, the purpose, the value of astrology to claim or to think or hope or want or to invest yourself in. Somehow the observations of an astrologer are scientifically based. It doesn't matter how precise the chart calculation is or anything like that. It's no more scientifically based than tarot cards are. It's just a divination system. And in this one chapter, because I understood the history of science to some extent when I was first studying astrology, he talks about how astrology fails to be established by science. Right, so they take a lot of charts. They have all these suicides in New York City, I believe, thousands and thousands of data for suicides. And they can't find any astrological pattern to the suicides. Now, we don't know the methodology and all this stuff, but what to me became abundantly obvious through reading the deconstruction of this, where this scientific approach meets astrology, was that science was what falls flat. It seemed plainly clear. I wonder if I've got my original copy of that book and I can find my original annotations. But from a calm intellectual perspective, looking at it, the thing that is deflated at the end of that chapter is not astrology. It was not astrology's failure. It was science's failure, and it reveals this complete scam that science is and what it's used for, and that doesn't mean that when someone is getting brain surgery, that honest scientists figured out that if you drop the body temperature down to 55 degrees and do the operation at 55 degrees, they're going to have a much better recovery rate. There's things we can use science for. the instruments in your car are useful to a point, right? So the speedometer doesn't tell you your state of mind. It tells you the speed you're traveling at. And so you just have to know the limits of the tool and use the tool honestly when you've got it, and know when you need a different tool to make an analysis. All right, I'm going to open your mic up again here. Let's see. Okay, did you hear all that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I was, you know, while you were talking, I was moving to a quieter space, and it helps a lot, but I missed, I think, a portion of what you were saying when you started talking about, you know, your investigative journalism into scientific fraud. But I caught the tail end of that, where you said that in 1982, the entire regulatory system of, I guess, health and science industry collapsed.
All products. Pesticides, herbicides, triclosan, the stuff in disinfectant, all artificial dyes, artificial scents, artificial colors, preservatives, additives, herbicides, pesticides, the entire system failed. All the studies, well, okay, something like 85% were shown to be fraudulent, leaving the final 15% in total question. And none of the registrations were pulled. That's the amazing thing, that the science was mythological. The so-called science being used was no more valid than you making up a story about anything. It was purely a story. There was no basis in reality, except people in white coats with pens and pencils and numbers.
Yeah.
But the amazing thing is, when it was all shown to be a failure, the only thing anyone really cared about was keeping the products on the market. Keeping the products on the market. And the regulators went to work with the captains of industry, and instead of dealing with the public health crisis, they devised a plan to keep selling pesticides. So the artificial coloring and the kind of active ingredient in the deodorant came along for the ride. The main thing that was being protected was the right of companies like Dow and Monsanto to put poison in food. Incredibly. That's what happened. I mean, I've got one really good article about this, and I know people who are directly involved in uncovering the story. Yeah. So you know, Peter von Stackelberg is often copied in on the eco list. That's who that is. You see that guy, Peter von Stackelberg, copied in?
Yeah.
To eco list list. He's the guy who broke that story.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and he's our friend. You know, you got a question, call him up and ask him.
Oh, cool.
But that's that's the genre that we're from. Call them up and ask them. So remember, anybody listening, call them up and ask them. Any other thoughts?
Yeah,
go ahead. Oh, please go on.
No, I was just going to say, I'd love to get access to the articles that you mentioned.
So I mentioned Dioxin Critic Sued and the one on the IBT Labs failure. So I'll put them up. I'll stick them right on the front page. It'll take me about half an hour. Thanks for participating. We're at 8:30. Nobody else has their hand up. I'm ready to move on. Thank you all for Stefan Stevens. Let's take one more call. I'm going to leave you on, Max. Hey there, Stefan. Can you hear me? Stefan.
Hello?
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Now I can.
And it's actually Spencer. I don't know why my dad's number is coming, or my dad's name is coming.
I see, because, yeah, phone's probably his name. Hi, Spencer.
Hi. I want to briefly share my experience with Saturn Stationing Direct a few weeks ago,
please
week and a half
do.
Ago.
Yeah, please do.
And kind of go based off the conversation on time about two calls ago.
Yeah.
But the thing that really like came through that day or that week was it felt like swimming through concrete. That's how I described it elsewhere. Uh-huh. Like everything I was trying to accomplish was taking multiple actions. So I couldn't just, you know, go to the store and get something. I have to go and the store is closed. I actually get there. It's not there. It's like everything is taking multiple steps. And I completely agree that time is speeding up. But that's been my problem is that it's taken me more time to actually accomplish what I want to do.
Well, it's an odd thing. That's the bizarre thing. It's not just one phenomenon. It's not just time speeding up. It's that things are taking more time. Or think about the past. Like, think about last week, last month, last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Do you have any sense of accurate perspective of how long that actually was?
Not like, at all.
Like a month ago might seem like more recently than a week ago.
It's really gotten worse, because I remember even before I really got into astrology, I was telling people that time is broken. Like, things are not the same as they were, because things that happened last week felt like last year, and then things from last year, 2 years ago, felt like yesterday.
Uh-huh.
You just couldn't get a real gauge on what was really happening. And when you mentioned water clocks earlier, I wonder if it was sort of like this, although not as quickly, because I would imagine water is so fluid that the experience of time would be a lot smoother.
Well, there also wasn't as strong of a consensus reality around time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because now it's like everyone's phone is set to the network. Right, your phone is constantly updating. There's an atomic clock somewhere. Time is measured by the breakdown of a radioactive isotope, right? Do we all know that? That your phone is connected to a pile of a hunk of radiation somewhere that's breaking down. I think that's worth contemplating a little bit. That's called the atomic clock, right? So now we're using the breakdown of radioactive isotopes to keep time, as opposed to a spring, like a wind-up, a little bell that rings.
And then even those, they would slow down, wouldn't they, after a certain period of time?
Sure.
You'd have to wind it back up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're much, much more variable. And then, like, when I was living in Germany, I had my Mac laptop clock chiming on the hour, and the church bells would come ringing in from three directions at the same time that my Mac would chime, meaning that the churches had their church bells set to the atomic clock.
On the atomic.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean...
So this...
What's that?
Extra pinpoint precision. Extra pinpoint precision on everybody's part was time.
Yeah, and then whatever, whether this is a cause or effect or whatever, the one result is, or one concurrent reality is, there's all this distortion. I can't help but think it's got something to do with nanoseconds, but that doesn't account for like the last week, last year. It doesn't account for things so long ago seeming like they were so recently, and things that were so recently seeming like they were so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have nothing for that. I have no clue what's pushing that along.
Though smart people have written about it. I mean, we could do a little project and dig up 5 or 10 articles on people. I saw one that came up on my Mozilla feed, The Real Reason Time Seems to Be Moving Faster, I think it was called.
The Real Write that down.
Yeah, let me see if that comes up. No, all right. So... No, this is from 2016. All right. So these things, you know, the Mozilla feed that has like this robot that picks articles for you on Firefox?
Yeah, I try and turn that off for me.
Yeah, I turn it on so I have one random source of... I invite one robot in to... anyway, sometimes that robot sends things up a second time, so maybe it will serve that article up. So I didn't have time to read it at the time, so I thought, oh, I'll read it soon. But I'm not seeing it come up quickly in Google. But it's an interesting question. And one thing I love about astrology is that it is so much more of a sophisticated method of telling time, and it allows for symbolic iterations of things. There's, in other words, there's nothing about 2 o'clock that is associated with the numerological value of two, right? You don't even think about it. You could be a numerologist. It's like, it's 2 o'clock. You're really thinking, well, what's two about? You know, well, I've got an appointment at three. Like, what's three? No, it's just practically random. The thing with astrology is you're looking at this 20-handed clock and you're noticing that, you know, once again, Mercury is rising, or once again, that there's a sun-moon aspect going on exactly at that time. So astrology allows in a symbolic set of references, which then are more easily adaptable into something approximating meaning. So when Trump has a new moon in his, which I can barely believe, a new moon in his progress chart, right? That just means that Trump was born in 46, so he's now 73. We just turned 73, right? So this says that basically on when Trump was 73 days old, little cute baby Trump was 73 days old, there was a new moon. That new moon has now manifested in his 73rd year of life. And under that new moon, he's getting impeached. You can't miss that. I guess you can, but if you're looking and you see,
I wonder what his family circumstances were at that time.
His what? Well, it was only
his family circumstance. Like, what was his father going through?
Who on that very day? It's hard to pinpoint that in someone's biography. It was almost a century ago, right? So how do we know? There's no one probably kept a diary. And I haven't really noticed progressions work quite like that. And like, was it really that different, you know, a week before, you know, or a week after, right? Like it was life, right? Life goes by, you water the plants, you go to work. So it's fairly likely that the week before, the week of, the week after, that new moon was similar. But it manifests now. I mean, it is stunning that this is one of the most astonishing examples of progressions I've ever seen, and I like to collect the really good ones. And the last time around, when I finally wrote my first really good magnum opus on progressions, I used Trump's chart as an example. And I kind of so disgusted by him that I forgot to look at his chart, realizing, well, this guy is very sensitive to progressions, very sensitive to progressions. Holy shit. On a progressed new moon, exactly while it's happening, the guy's getting impeached. This is, it's incomprehensible. So, you know, there you go. And astrology certainly has those moments. So it's a different model of time, for sure. But I think we're all through. Go ahead.
There was someone, I don't remember who it was. He was an astrologer, but he would do mandalas with charts, and he was proposing a revised, not so much a clock, but he was trying to incorporate astrology into a more universal measurement of time. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So like a normal, you know, 24-hour clock? Normal 24-hour clock, but then somehow merging it with an astrological sort of clock, something that would allow the easy reading of both, I guess, for the most part. But I don't remember who it was, and I can't find it. It was this one person. I don't know if he's even alive anymore, but it was really interesting when I saw it.
Well, if you think of it, please send it my way. Make sure that I answer. The one of the weird things about astrology, Western style, is it's, especially when you think that until recently, the slowest known planet was Saturn. And so we're really talking about a very local measurement of time. When you compare that to, like, for example, the Mayan calendar, which is able to essentially forecast astronomical events that are happening 1,000 years in the future. Like, how... Right. So when you look at these Mesoamerican clocks, they are able to, using day counts and cycles like tons and baktons and so forth, able to handle vastly long scales of time that it seems like Western astrology just can't do. And now our longest moving commonly known planet is Eris with a 558-year orbit. That's not really that long. Previously, it was Pluto. Previous to that, it was Neptune. And not long before that, it was Saturn. Just think about this. Just in the 18th century, the longest cycle they had was a 29-year cycle. What can you really do with it?
So that is a somewhat big jump for us, but then in comparison to the Mayans, yeah, that isn't much.
No.
With the thousands upon thousands of years of cycles.
No. How do they land up in 2012 with a year of Venus transit of the sun? Like, they're that exact that they land, boom, Venus transit of the sun. And then 2020 happens one Venus cycle later. It's incomprehensible. And who told them? It really makes you think that, like, it was, you know, delivered from a UFO or something like that. But they were good at mathematics. Mm-hmm. We're good at other things. We have an atomic clock. They had mathematicians. I mean, we have good mathematicians too. But
and I was just thinking that there were those there they were going like these very long periods of time where we're coming down to this very minuscule measurement of time with atomic clocks, with nanoseconds. These very, although unless they're the same thing, I guess that's not my expertise.
Yeah. I mean, they're certainly related in a sense, but like, it's a whole other technology. The ability to formulate and to, you know, count, basically. But who knows? You know, I've never spent much time with an atomic physicist, so I don't even know what you know, what it's like to, like, even be near a mind like that. Just haven't ever interviewed or had a friend who was one of them. So I can't like this. Well, this person had an interesting perspective. But Einstein seemed to have been a decent guy. A lot of good ideas. Decent guy. You know, cared about people and all that. But not, you know, Fermi, the people who really cooked up the atomic bomb. Holy shit, what karma. To get involved in that. All right. So, any other thoughts? Please stay in touch. And are you on our list, or can we reach you? Your name is Spencer?
Yeah, I've been in contact with you. This is Spencer.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. Forgive me, for a lot of water goes by under the bridge.
No.
Good. Awesome. Wonderful. Any other closing thoughts? Yours or anyone else's?
Yeah, I was just going to share one short little thing with Saturn stationing direct. Usually if there's a big transit and I don't have like an outer event happen, I'll usually have a dream. I won't go into the details of the dream, but I had two, and they both had the same theme of there was an injustice happening and nobody responded because they were afraid of the one person doing it. But if everyone had responded, like there was enough traction to make a change. And like, that's just kind of what I'm hoping for, not even hoping for, what I'm seeing in this moment, I guess, that now's the time for people to push for what they want.
Yeah.
And it's just what I'm kind of seeing at the moment.
Well, we're certainly in a moment where conscience is an important thing to respond to. All right, so a couple of more hands just went up. I can leave your mic open if you want, but Michael in Las Vegas is entering the conversation. Hold on a second here, Mr. Michael.
I'm just waiting. That's it. I can be muted. I'm done.
Okay, awesome. All right, so Michael, hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, how you doing, Eric? How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you for joining the conversation.
Yeah, thank you. I wonder if you thought
of No, I can't hear you.
Thought of this concept of logos.
Michael, can you say that again?
Yeah. What do you thought of this concept of logos?
I try to wrap my head around it. There's so many competing ideas that's a little over my head. But the way that I'm working with the point logos in astrology is as framing one's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationship between framing one's reality and the language one uses to do so. That is not the formal concept of logos from Greek philosophy, but it's related to it.
Right. And I noticed that, if I could say that, Trump's logos, Trump's Neptune is conjunct logos position right now.
Trump's in his natal chart. Okay, so he's it's Logos Makemake conjunct at about 5 Libra, and that's where his that certainly fits. And wow, look at that Mercury Neptune square. Holy shit. I mean, that's, you know, you want to be kind of careful about saying that the Mercury Neptune square indicates people who have truthiness issues, but boy, does that come bursting out of his chart? But the distortion factor of Logos Neptune is pretty hard to miss. In this case.
And I thought, well, the thing that occurred to me in a long-term frame of reference, having to do with Neptune, Pluto. Has to do with a sort of morality on trial, not Trump on trial.
Yeah,
but morality on trial.
Well, does it exist? Do the reference points still exist?
That's the question.
Right. I mean, I found myself.
The issue will be, I think, to me, whether people even think that what he did was wrong.
Well, I think it's bigger than that. I think that, morality is an internal frame of reference. If there is no, ideally, right, it's, you know right from wrong. You don't have to be told. And if we lack the concept of internal, how then do we have an internal frame of reference? If we're not able to dial in inward, how then can there be an internal assessment of right or wrong? How can that get traction?
Well, the question here is whether on the public judgment that he did right or wrong.
But the public is composed of individuals, right?
Right, yeah. But is there a consensus, that sense of right or wrong?
Well, the lady that I met today who said that she'd be fine if he chopped up a family with an axe clearly has to vote for him again.
That's very telling.
Yeah, and that's coming from the ground. That's not coming from Trump.
That's the ground. That's not figure. That's ground.
Yes.
Yeah.
And multiply that out, and I, you know, there's very smart people I know, very high IQ, successful people who still support this person, which to me says it's not about him, it's about us.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's about us.
And then
I think that's what's on trial.
Go ahead.
And I think that's what's on trial.
Yeah. Literally trial, like we're trying it. We're going to attempt to discern right from wrong. Yeah.
Yes.
Chilling. Chilling. Joshua's got his hand up. Hold on. Joshua's back. Good evening.
Hello.
Sir.
Hi there. I wanted to talk about Vesta a little bit.
Yes, I'm noticing that.
That's cool.
Vesta's I was noticing Vesta in the Donald's chart, but what was your thought about Vesta?
Well, I was curious about what Vesta in the eighth house might look like, what that might be about.
Well, I have that.
I'll give you a little bit.
Donald has that. Do you have Vesta in the eighth?
No, it happened. So at the Tantra Festival I just went to last month, I was checking that over with healing experience I had there, what we talked about. And then that was conjunct my natal pholis in, at the time of the event, Vesta was in the eighth house. Conjunct my natal pholis. So I was curious about what that might be about. I mean, I imagine, go ahead.
You had the experience. So it was about whatever the experience was. In terms of, conceptualizing it, I mean, it would seem to me like if we use the most rudimentary concept of Vesta, which is space, opening a space, defining space, that's what happened. You had a space defined, and then something happened in that space.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I think on one level, Vesta is just marvelously neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And makes a space.
Yeah.
You know, like a black box in theater.
So, thank you. So in the eighth house, do you have any, just in general, I'm curious about, and then in Taurus, about picking up momentum, maybe, or?
Oh, I'd have to contemplate this more carefully and get more information from you.
Yeah.
I mean, Vesta's been stationing.
That's perfectly fine.
Right. I mean, Vesta's been stationing. That's meaningful. It's right near Sedna.
Mm.
That's meaningful. That's
okay.
That's deep background stuff.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, maybe I'll talk to you further off this call at some point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I prefer to look at mundane charts. You know, not I'm not against natal charts, but you know, the chart for the thing happening, I think, that close to the action immediacy of a mundane chart, I just find to be more informative than going from like a psychological perspective of the natal chart.
And yeah, I'm looking at both, just comparing them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll send you a photo.
Okay, awesome. For soon. All right. Let's open up the line for Max. Michael, your line is still open, just so you know. Max, one more thought. What's up? Nope. All right. I've got a couple. I've got my roster has like several versions of Max on it. Are you there? Okay. All right. I think we are done. Unless one more last call. Listen, thank you all for participating. It's been a pleasure and an honor, and I will process this recording and put it up ASAP. So thank you again, and thanks for Amy for being in the background and setting up all the call details, and everyone at Planet Waves for making all those mailings last night, and me and you, and bye for now.